atop Fox News headquarters in New York City. Always seeking solutions, never sowing division. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Brian Kilmeade here coming your way. This hour, we're going to be joined by Trey Gowdy, former chairman of the Oversight Committee. Great contributor here on Fox News. Fantastic show on Sunday. Lieutenant Colonel Alan West. Excited to be coming to you from New York, not to be in Chicago. I like Chicago. I've only been there a handful of times out of all the major cities and all the travel. I haven't been there a lot, but I do not envy anybody who's got to get moving in and out of that city with the thousands of protesters and the such a fear of 1968 revisited. There's security is everywhere, seven different lines to get through, fences to get through when you have live hits. But I'll be able to give you a great insight this hour with great guests. And Trey Gowdy is there. So we'll do that. And, of course, the president's speech probably outlived you, and you probably went to bed last night. So I got some review of that. So let's get to the big three.
Now, with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
The speech she gave on Friday is so unbelievable. They want to move her to the center. But then on Friday, she gives the most radical economic speech ever given by a nominee for president.
That is Newt Gingrich, and he's right. Always right to the point. More facts come out on what a Kamala Harris economy would look like and the cost of it all. We'll review what we know.
Number two.
There's no actual evidence that Kamala Harris knows what she believes. She's not talking to the media. And her entire argument so far is that if you elect her president, she will somehow fix the inflation and border crisis that was caused by her leadership.
Up there you go. J.D. Vance weighs in. The Trump Vance remains in action. Their campaign battling hard in battleground states. Their message clear, crisp and concise. And it's about the economy. The number one issue on all the polls by a lot.
Number one.
By the way, I see a report that convention officials are saying that the reason it went long is because of all the raucous applause. That's sort of the thing you build into. We have had conventions before. Like, you sort of know what.
That's amazing spin.
Yeah, and it's ridiculous. In fact, Michael Tyler just said it. We weren't expecting all that applause. He's a spokesperson, formerly with Biden, now with Harris, who does a good job, by the way. He just said, we weren't planning on all this applause. Really? What kind of speeches were you looking for? Day one of the DNC, an unorganized, undisciplined marathon that started their keynote speaker at 11:30 Eastern time. Featured a lot of Trump hate, sighs of relief that the rapidly aging Biden is not head of the table, and hope they can now win in November. We recap and preview, recap one and preview day two. So the good news is one of the most talented speakers in the country, Barack Obama, will be speaking, and one of the most popular Democrats, Michelle Obama, will be speaking. I have no idea on the format that they gave Bill Clinton Wednesday, which is more prestigious than Tuesday. Bill Clinton, since he left office, and more things have come out about what he did in office, let alone the impeachment that took place. And then they have the Epstein plane trips. I can't believe that they would feature him, not bury him, like they buried Jimmy Carter for years. But that's their decision. So what do I think of the speech? Way too long. It recounted Joe Biden's. Way too long. It recounted everything that he said he accomplished during his years. He obviously is not over. Whoever okayed that speech, it's crazy. I talked to a higher up at the RNC, they looked through every word of every speech before they went out there, from Tucker Carlson on down, from Nikki Haley on down. And even when it comes, you got to be respectful, but you got to say, Mr. President, you can't go for 50 minutes at night. You're the last speaker. I know this is it and you're going home after this, but you know, it's not good for you. Less is more. But instead, they go for four, he goes for 49 minutes. They repeats the fallacy about Trump with the bloodbath statement. Yeah, Trump said it would be an economic bloodbath. CNBC and Fox Business do that every day. The dictator on the first day was a casual comment, funny comment made at a town hall with Sean Hannity. He said dictator for a day to start building the wall and start kicking out illegal immigrants, which he has not done. 8.9 million minimum have gotten here. And he brought up the whole Charlottesville fallacy that the president said there's good people on both sides, as if there's good people pretending to be in the KKK. First off, the KKK, Democratic organization, number one, historically. Number two, Donald Trump didn't say that. It's already been kicked to the curb, fact checked multiple times. So why would you put it in your last speech again? And border security is actually better now when Trump left office. No one believes that. And if you think the numbers are down over the last few weeks, maybe they are because of the heat. And maybe they are because you now have an app. So you can be in Ecuador, Guatemala, El Salvador, Tajikistan, log on, and then you could hop on a flight and come in here. You're not counted as a border crosser. And suddenly Mexico is enforcing their border. We know that's all temporary. Just wait. Here's a little of Joe Biden. Cut to.
It's been the honor of my lifetime to serve as your president. I love the job, but I love my country more. I love my country more. And all this talk about how I'm angry at all those people who said I should step down, that's not true.
Look, I don't know. I'm not behind the scenes. He's got a very small circle. I'm really doubtful of anybody except their last name's Biden and they decide to leak it anonymously that says he's angry. I'd be angry if I was him because he's convinced he does not know he's failing. He does not acknowledge it. And he says, I looked at the polls and I'm only 2 or 3 points off. And he's not wrong. And that was a hideous debate. But it wasn't a bad debate. It was a failure to speak, a failure to think. That was the problem. Why don't you just admit it? The problem is no one's being honest. No one's being honest that behind the scenes, he was knifed and kicked to the curb by Nancy Pelosi. No one's being honest that Joe Biden took it in stride and made his own decision on his own. It was donors that stopped funding him. Number two, he was getting more and more lawmakers every day calling for him to resign. Who was actually left? What choice did he actually have? And you see people, the guy, actually the last people standing by him were Bernie Sanders and AOC. That just shows you what kind of presidency he had, in my view. So you had people that were now were working for him and fighting for him to the last breath, quickly flipped and have now joined Kamala Harris. The one thing I would say, I have heard no indication, no reporting that she was disloyal to him. But I would say it's noteworthy how quick she was able to ramp up her campaign, consolidate 500-plus delegates, and just circumvent the fact that she got zero primary votes. 14 million went to Biden, zero went to her. If you want to know about the honeymoon, where it came from, how it started is everyone blacked out what she was as a vice president, blacked out the fact that Jamie Raskin, Elizabeth Warren, Nancy Pelosi have said in various friendly interviews, indicated that maybe the president would be better off with a different running mate because she was so ineffective. And I could bring those sound bites back. Andrea Mitchell brought it up as friendly as interview as you can get on NBC about how ineffective she was. And if she was more of a viable number two, people would feel better about giving him a second term. And now suddenly she's a female Barack Obama with a little Margaret Thatcher sprinkled in. So I just wish people would be candid about the whole thing. Be candid that he didn't want to leave. Be candid that he was only a few points off. Be candid that he was also failing. Be candid that he also wasn't successful. Be candid that he had a 38% approval rating. Be candid that under his regime, we had 9% inflation rate that's now only going up at 3%, but it doesn't factor in, it never goes away, that we jacked up 9%. And that's what people are feeling right now. On the economy, there's no poll that I have seen that anyone thinks that Donald Trump's economy wasn't better than Joe Biden's. We just had Pete Buttigieg on our channel saying the economy was better under Joe Biden. Well, the America doesn't think that. You can spin all you want, but America doesn't think that. So when Obama had everything to do with his ouster, widespread reports, he's speaking tomorrow. They're not speaking to the Bidens. The Bidens aren't speaking to Nancy Pelosi. Michelle Obama's not speaking to the Bidens. And who knows who's going to consolidate around him when it's all said and done. Here's Kellyanne Conway. Cut 14.
The way he was treated is pretty untenable. And we reminded earlier that I think it was Dana that mentioned it was Kamala Harris that went on all the shows after the debate and said Joe Biden had a bad night, but he's a great president, etc. There's somebody else who did that. His name is Barack Obama. He came out with a tweet shortly after that debate and said, we all know, we all have bad nights, we all have bad debates. I, Barack Obama, know something about that. So this whiplash, I think it's a sugar high. It doesn't have staying power for the swing voters watching, for the independents in those seven states, for the 21 or 22 counties that are going to decide who the next president is.
Yeah, and it is. It's still a dead heat. And I think I just mentioned the Media Research Center came out. 84% of the stories written or spoken about on television have been positive for Kamala Harris. 89% have been negative for Donald Trump. I mean, that's stunning. I was just floored by that. I put that on Twitter. I was just floored by that. How is it possible that a former president who's neck and neck with everybody beating Joe Biden in a dead heat with Kamala Harris has done everything wrong? Everything. But yet when you ask him to compare the two economies, compare him on inflation, compare him on immigration, he wins by double digits, leads by double digits. On abortion, it's a different story. But if you want to run on this horrific move that most people would say they don't look forward to abortions, Kamala Harris evidently loves abortion. Letitia James in New York City loves abortion. It used to be something everyone spoke about because no one wanted to go through it, but they wanted to have access to it. That used to be how it was explained. It's not explained anymore because it's such a political advantage to talk about it. And the other thing the president said that I think was ridiculous and evidently ad-libbed on the protesters, on many of our pro-Hamas wearing the Yasser Arafat dress-up kit and pro-Palestinian anti-Semitic, cut 15.
We're working around the clock, my Secretary of State, to prevent a wider war and reunite hostages with their families and surge humanitarian health and food assistance into Gaza now. To end the civilian suffering of the Palestinian people. And finally deliver a ceasefire and end this war. Those protesters out in the street, they have a point. A lot of innocent people are being killed.
Really? That was ad-libbed.
Both sides.
That was ad-libbed, and it's not true. Anybody who dies who's innocent in Gaza is solely the responsibility of people in charge, and that is Hamas. Why is that hard for him to understand? Why does he never say that? Lieutenant Colonel Alan West will bring that up when he comes back, and then Trey Gowdy, the bottom of the hour. Busy hour. So glad you're here. Brian Kilmeade Show.
It's Brian Kilmeade.
Hey, it's Clay Travis. Join me for Outkick the Show as we dive deep into a mix of topics. New episodes available Monday to Friday on your favorite podcast platform and watch directly on outkick.com/watch.
The more you listen, the more you'll know. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Border encounters have dropped over 50%. In fact, there are fewer border crossings today than when Donald Trump left office. And unlike Trump, we will not demonize immigrants, saying they're the poison of blood of America.
Yeah, right. And but you also let them all in, including the gangsters that just got arrested in Buffalo, a notorious gangster from Colombia. How about the 99 on the 99 that are here loose in this country on the FBI terror watch list? Lieutenant Colonel Alan West, Dallas County Republican Chairman, American Constitutional Rights Union Executive Director, joins us now. Colonel, your thoughts? He says the border's now quieter than when Trump took over.
Well, that's a lie, and it's a bold-faced lie. Look, let's look at the numbers. Right now in the United States of America, you have more single military-age males here illegally than you have the active duty and strength of the United States Army. You have more gotaways in this country. We don't know who they are, where they are, than you have the active duty and strength of our entire United States military. You have more these single military age males than you have in the United States Marine Corps, which is at World War I levels. And you're talking about 30 to 35,000 single military age male Chinese that are in this country. But the most disturbing thing that, for whatever reason, he refuses to convey to people, 250,000 Americans have died because of fentanyl poisoning in 3.5 years. That's a chemical war that we're engaged in with China, with the cartels. And when you put that in a relative perspective, 58,000 Americans were lost in the entire time of the Vietnam War. 37,000 Americans were lost in the entire Korean War. We've lost 250,000 in 3.5 years, and he just wants to brush aside that. No, we have an invasion that has occurred. We have terrorists roaming about our streets. We have criminals that are murdering and killing Americans. And again, you know, Lincoln Riley would probably still be alive. Jocelyn Nungaray, the 12-year-old here in Houston, Texas, would still be alive, say, for the policies of the open borders of Joe Biden and Kamala Harris.
So I want you to understand, too, that they also say that crime is down in this country. And they also say the economy's better than it was under Trump.
You know, again, you ask yourself, where's the objective media? Where's the Huntley-Brinkley, you know, media of people out there that will say, you know, not so fast, my friends. That's not true. I mean, when you look at what is happening on our streets, the crime and criminality, it is way up. You talk to anybody here in the city of Dallas, they will tell you that it's not just homicides are an issue, it's the burglaries that are an issue. You know, when I have to ask someone, an attendant at the CVS or the Walgreens, to please unlock the glass case so that I can get some razors so that I can shave. That lets you know how bad crime is.
I want you to hear this protester yesterday, Cut 18.
Do you support October 7th?
Who?
October 7th.
October 7th? Yes, I do. What's wrong with October 7th? You tell me.
Women and children.
What?
To murder.
What is this you came up with this? Where you come up with, they kill 40,000 Palestinian innocent women and children, and they have 100 hostages. They treat them like kings and princes.
What do you say to people, idiots like that?
They are the useful idiots, as Vladimir Lenin would say. But the sad fact is that the Democrat Party has welcomed them in, and they're not doing anything, and they're allowing these pro-Hamas supporters to take over our streets. Let's not forget when Prime Minister Netanyahu was speaking in Israel, they tore down American flags at Union Station, raised up the terrorist flag. Gaza is governed by a terrorist organization, a terrorist organization that puts women and children at risk, and they hide those hostages in apartments with civilians. So they're the ones that are wrong. But Breitbart just published an article earlier this week. Well, yesterday, as a matter of fact, Kamala Harris secretly met with the mayor of Dearborn, Michigan, because they're very concerned about those votes in Michigan. And guess what? You're talking about one of the most anti-Semitic individuals who has praised October the 7th. Why would the Democrat nominee for president want to sit down and meet with an anti-Semite? I think that's a question she should be asked.
So let me ask you this, Colonel. A lot of people, including me, said the president should go easy on the insults. Then I watched last night and saw how many times he was personally insulted, called a convicted felon, called a liar. Biden was the worst. Do you feel differently? Does that make you feel differently?
As far as President Trump, one of the things that we always say in the military is you maintain the high ground. And again, when you render people irrelevant by not responding to their insidious attacks, you take away power from them. If President Trump wants to win this, he stays focused on the issues. He gets his message out there, and he tears apart Kamala Harris and Tim Walz based upon the issues, not anything else. Because I want to tell you right now, the most important thing, I would say that why would we want someone to be Vice President of the United States of America, second in command, in line to be the Commander-in-Chief, who is a coward, who abandoned his unit when they were called up to action? That's a pretty powerful statement.
That is the vice president, the governor of Minnesota. Lieutenant Colonel West, thank you.
Always a pleasure. Take care, Brian.
You got it. He's Dallas County Republican Party chair. Also speaking for the country, former congressman from Florida. When we come back, Trey Gowdy. On the whole convicted felon talk, also on the president's request for sentencing to go after Election Day. And Attorney General Alvin Bragg said, I'm okay with that. It's up to the judge now. What does Trey Gowdy think will happen? He was in the courtroom during those convictions, during those trials. Don't move.
If you're interested in it, Brian's talking about it. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
She understands the urgency of rent checks and groceries and prescriptions. She is as committed to our reproductive and civil rights as she is to taking on corporate greed. Because if you are a working parent trying to afford rent and childcare, Kamala is for you. If you are a senior who had to go back to work because your retirement didn't stretch far enough, Kamala is for you.
So if I want to get Trey Gowdy's attention, I bring back to his days in Congress where he would get up every day, according to reports, and say, I wonder what AOC thinks about these issues. So I thought, why don't I open up with what she said last night and make him feel like he's still in Congress? Trey Gowdy, former congressman, oversight committee chair, now Fox News contributor and anchor host on Sunday night with Trey Gowdy. He's doing a lot of the coverage and contributing to almost every show now in Chicago. Trey, welcome back. What do you think about the remarks from AOC?
I guess what I would ask her, if this were like an examination and a cross-examination, is who has been co-piloting the Titanic for the last 3 years? I mean, if prices are too high, she's not running against, like, the incumbent. She is the incumbent. She's been co-piloting this airplane. So, I mean, I just find it amazing when I hear on day one, when you're really on, like, day 1,201. I surely the jury is not going to fall for that argument that I am going to do all of these things that for the last 3 years I haven't done. Mm.
So, you know, the thing is, it's a pep rally for both parties. But the one thing that was underappreciated is how the Republicans ran on time. I mean, it was just, you know, you speak, you're on. If you're on the roster, you will speak. And when you get when it's time to get off, you get off. I didn't know that was that big of a deal with adults. But now you have the former president of the United States, the keynote speaker, going at 11:30. Now, some say they wanted to hide him. I don't think so. I mean, he should have been on by 10:30, the latest. And they still had to cut James Taylor and his inspirational music, as well as, I think, Debbie Wasserman Schultz, who I personally was looking forward to. That's how my whole family. I mean, so they cut three speakers out, and they still put him on at 11:30. And then he goes for almost 50 minutes. Where were you during this, Trey?
I was watching a miniseries called The Old Man with Jeff Bridges, because, and not because it was Biden either, although I think Biden is actually older than the character in the miniseries, The Old Man. Part of me, there's a little bit of humanity left in me, Brian, despite the fact that I was a prosecutor. Mm-hmm. It is his swan song. I mean, he had a long career in public service. He was unceremoniously dumped, but the reality is people always stay a minute too late. Almost no one leaves a minute too early. And last night was proof of that. You just don't know that your time has actually passed. And he didn't pass the torch. It was actually a larceny. They took it from him. But it's hard. People lack the self-awareness to know it's just not your time anymore.
Trey says, somebody who always seeks the truth, it must really frustrate you that no one's even approaching it, even though we know it. We know he's too old. We know he couldn't keep the job. We know that Nancy Pelosi forced him out. We know that he didn't give Kamala Harris almost anything to do. We know that there was a push on the Democratic side to push her out. But now they want us to believe he knew it was time. He's George Washington. Nancy Pelosi wanted him to do what it was right for him. And now we think Kamala Harris is half Barack Obama and half Margaret Thatcher. We know that second half of my statements aren't true. Does it matter that they're never going to admit it, that they think they're getting away with this deception?
No, I don't think it matters, because you're never going to get – I mean, I hate using courtroom analogies, but that was the one job I was halfway decent at. You rarely, if ever, have those Matlock moments where a defendant says, okay, you got me. I really committed the crime. But that's not the jury. The jury would be the American people. And the American people know that he was running up until the very moment when they said, look, we're going to have more people come out and call for you to step down. No, he didn't step down because he's incapable of doing the job, because that's been the case for quite some time. He stepped down because he was not only going to lose but take the House and the Senate down with him. And the thing that is, like, admire-worthy about the Democrats is they are willing to do anything to win. The question I have for Republicans is, are you willing to do what it takes to win? Are you willing to have the discipline to focus on the issue? Because no one cares about race, gender, IQ scores, LSAT scores. No one cares about that. Nobody cares about who's better looking. They care about the border, economy, inflation, national security, crime. And if you're not talking about those things, then you're not talking about what the jury wants to hear about.
I think you're right. But it is noteworthy how many personal attacks the president was the target of, was the recipient of yesterday. How they called him a convicted felon. They said multiple times that he's a liar, that he came out and called for a bloodbath if he loses, when he said it was all economics. Been shown that even in the Washington Post. He's going to be a dictator on the first day was a tossed aside comment he made to Sean Hannity, totally inaccurate. The border security is better now than it was when Trump left office. And, of course, on Charlottesville, that he said there were good people on both sides, the Ku Klux Klan and the others, which has also been disproven. When you see those inaccuracies told about you, if you're Trump, do you blame him for saying, why can't I attack back?
Right. However, you have to have discipline. Discipline is required in every facet of life. And I can't tell you the number of times in a courtroom where I had to sit there for day after day after day while the defense put up their defense. And it wasn't my time. Milwaukee was the Republican time. This is their week. It's going to be a bad week. But if you stop and listen and learn and plot and plan, this week will pass. And you will have a chance to respond. You'll have a chance during the debate. But you have to stay on message. No one cares who is better looking between Kamala Harris and Donald Trump. No one cares about LSAT scores because most of the world hasn't taken the LSAT. They care about – but human nature is self-interested. We want to know what is in our best interest. So Donald Trump has all the rejoinders in the world. I mean, I would start by saying, how many of the parents of dead kids killed by immigrants have you called? You say you're a prosecutor. You've been letting more people out of jail than you've been putting in. You keep talking about day one. What have you done on one day, day 1001? He has 1,000 policy arguments to make. And if this comes down to policy, the Republicans will win. If it comes down to personality – then he'll be mad at me for saying this, but it won't be the first time he's mad at me. If it comes down to personality, Republicans are going to lose. And if it comes down to policy, Republicans will win.
And you know, if you ask people, by almost a 2-1 margin, the economy's number one, and usually in double digits, now high single figures, Trump wins out on that conversation. Then comes inflation. Trump wins out on that in conversation. In fact, on the when it comes to border security and immigration, Trump comes out on top. The one he loses is abortion, and he's doing the best he can to get his point across. And some of those examples last night were abhorrent, but they were on stage yesterday. So a little bit of discipline was seeing the president and vice president, the former president and his nominee, in separate locations in battleground states. It looks like they're going to be in Michigan, Pennsylvania. Here's Trump yesterday, cut 20.
Kamala cast the tie-breaking votes that gave us the worst inflation in American history, costing a typical family $28,000. And under Kamala, we have fallen into manufacturing recession with 13,000 manufacturing jobs lost in the United States since just the start of this year.
How about that for discipline?
It is incredibly disciplined with one exception.
Yep.
You have to pronounce someone's name correctly because it is it gives your opponents a reason to attack you, and it undercuts the real thrust of your message. She pronounces her name Kamala. It doesn't matter how the rest of us would pronounce it or how we think it's pronounced. Mm-hmm. She says it's Kamala. So why would you allow your critics any opening? The message of what he communicated was perfect. So why distract from the message by giving any room for cross-examination whatsoever? So I would give him an A for that message. It would be an A-plus if he just said Vice President Harris. I would never fail to remind people she was the co-pilot. Brian, most people think the country's headed in the wrong direction. Who the heck's been in the passenger seat of the car for the last 3 years? That's what I would focus on. Yeah. Vice President Harris, most of you, 3/4 of you, think she is driving the car in the wrong direction. Why would you turn the steering wheel over to her?
Yeah, you know what? I didn't pick up on that because I've heard her say it differently in the past of her own name. So we'll see about that. That was intentional. The other thing I would say on a minor point, being that you're in my business now too, is that it doesn't seem like the writer of his copy knows what he's like. If you ever watch Gutfeld read the prompter, it's him in conversation. He writes most of it. I wish that he could get a writer on the prompter that makes him more comfortable with his words, because it seems like the writer is not writing for him. They're writing for them. That's why he goes monotone.
Yes. Well, there are people who can channel him. And I will tell you this. You've been around him more privately than I have. But the Donald Trump in private is incredibly charismatic.
Oh, yeah.
He is thoughtful. It is not the person that I see during rallies. So at some point you have to say, look, Mr. President, breaking news, you won the primary. Oh, there is no more primary. We do not. We want the base motivated, but the primary is over. We have moved to trying to persuade people who maybe haven't made up their minds yet, or people who like your policies but worry that maybe your personality is not what they want. Someone has to have that conversation, and someone needs to prepare him for the debate, because he ain't debating Joe Biden. Now, whether or not she was a good trial lawyer or not, I don't know. But, you know, John Ratcliffe was a very, very good trial lawyer. There are other very, very good trial lawyers. That's who needs to debate him, because he is going to have some things coming at him that are ad hominem and personal, and he needs the discipline to continue to repeat the mantra, you were the co-pilot of this economy that has so many people struggling. You were given one job, the border, just one job. So I need to know, did you refuse to do it, or did you do it and just fail? The message discipline, if he can keep that, not only will he win, he may have a House and a Senate to work with if he can remain disciplined on the message.
Yeah, I think it's going to be all or nothing. It's hard to imagine him winning and not getting the Senate and keeping the House, because everything's so close. And it's hard to imagine him losing and them keeping the Senate and House. Although it looks like Montana is going in the right direction and West Virginia is going in the right direction. And if everybody holds serve, that would put them up and maybe save us adding two states and packing the court and getting rid of the filibuster. I mean, that's the minimum damage they will do. Trey, something else happened to your legal background. You sat in the court with Juan Merzan, the judge, and you watched the president get convicted on 34 counts. They're basically the same count over and over again. And it's been used right now at the DNC a lot last night. Can imagine going to use a lot more today and tomorrow. But it looks like Attorney General Bragg is not standing in the way if the judge wanted to grant an extension on the sentencing from, I think, September 18th till after the election. Alvin Bragg came out and says, I don't have a problem with that. What do you think the judge will do? You saw him up close.
Well, I think two things. Number one, I think the president has a wonderful opening here, which is they came after me with all the power of the judicial system I am running, so they can't do the same thing to you. I'm a billionaire. I can afford lawyers. Many of you cannot. So don't focus on me. What they've done to me, they've done. But I'm running to keep them from doing it to you. Remember, Brian, people are self-interested. Yep. I mean, we are by nature selfish.
Great point.
So I would say that, and then I would – it is in his political best interest to be sentenced between now and the election. Because remember what happened after he was convicted. His numbers went up. People see this prosecution for what it is, which leads me to believe that the Democrats are whispering to Juan Merchan, look, we're doing okay right now. Do not sentence him to an active sentence, because you will make him a martyr and he will go up. I don't know whether they're ex parteing the judge and saying that to him, but the judge is clearly not a Republican. Surely he is smart enough to know if I sentence this man to an active prison sentence, I'm essentially guaranteeing, number one, that he has message discipline because he's in prison and he can't talk. And number two, there will be a sympathy effect, and I may be guaranteeing his victory. So I think he will either postpone it or sentence him to probation.
Wow, I'm embarrassed. I'm supposed to be the New Yorker who's street smart. And this happened in New York. You're supposed to be the idealistic guy from South Carolina who thinks he sees the better in people. And you actually are thinking three steps ahead. You totally surprised me with that comment. Totally.
Then it must have been an accident, because the day that I surprise you with something, or the day that I say something interesting is shocking enough.
No, you
surprise you.
Well, yeah, I mean, I'm thinking about that. I know it was like that in May, but to be able to say that this guy's looking at prison, he's going to be a prison serving in jail, or imagine if they say report to prison. I mean, if he says that,
you guarantee his victory if you do that. And I think they're smart enough, which is why the DA did not oppose postponing sentencing. The DA knows that. And look, I'm not accusing anybody of ex parteing a judge. You can't ex parte a judge. You can't walk into his or her office and say, hey, look, we really don't want him to become president, so don't sentence him.
Right.
But you don't have to be – you don't have to have a law degree to see what happened.
Right.
But I think Trump is smart to say, Look, they shot me. They tried to kill me, but I'm running to protect you. They came after me with the judicial system, but I can hire lawyers. I'm worried about you. The ability to feed in to the self-interest of voters.
Gotcha.
That, but for the grace of God, go I, is a winning argument. But but it requires him to stop talking about himself and talk more about others.
Trey Gowdy, I'm glad I talked to you. 9 o'clock Sundays, you get to hear Trey do his own thing and see him contribute throughout this week. Trey Gowdy, thank you so much.
Thank you.
In a moment. Brian Kilmeade Show.
Covering this election year like no other, it's Brian Kilmeade. Radio that makes you think. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
There are a lot of people, if they have made it this far into what is, to be honest, on the East Coast, the second day of the Democratic National Convention, which I'm not the first one to observe.
It is late, which is,
it is rather
which is
late.
Very notable, I think, for a lot of reasons.
Yeah, I mean, it is fair to say that the Republicans had a tighter ship.
That is Jake Tapper trying to be diplomatic in saying that it is 12:30 in the morning and Republicans were done at 10:30. And you have a former president historically stepping aside out of nowhere 20 days ago, last major speech of a 50-year career. And you put him on at 11:30 and oblivious to the audience. He goes until 12. He goes about an hour. And goes through what he says is victory. So they better tighten it up. I mean, just a bad it's a bad look. Barack Obama goes tonight. Michelle Obama goes. And for some reason, Bill Clinton goes on Wednesday. So we'll continue to track it because it's going to make an impact. And we'll see what kind of bounce they get. Brian Kilmeade Show.
From the Fox News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan, it's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
Welcome, everyone, to the Brian Kilmeade Show. So glad you're here. We come to you from Midtown Manhattan, heard around the country, around the world. I got Barney and Company simulcast in about 30 minutes. Got Michael Goodwin standing by. We have day one of the DNC. We have a lot of dynamics because it's kind of interesting that the Trump is going out on the campaign trail, too. We have a lot of other things and stories that we're following that matter a lot. Especially in Ukraine, where they continue to penetrate inside Russia, and Russia is now pushing through on Ukraine. So it's a race to see who could do more damage to each other, against each other. Much different than what Ukraine does to civilians and what the Russians, they target civilians. So let's get to the big three.
Now, with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
The speech she gave on Friday is so unbelievable. They want to move it to the center. But then on Friday, she gives the most radical economic speech ever given by a nominee for president.
And there you go. Newt Gingrich is right. More facts come out on what Kamala Harris' economy would look like and cost all of us. We review.
Number two.
There's no actual evidence that Kamala Harris knows what she believes. She's not talking to the media. And her entire argument so far is that if you elect her president, she will somehow fix the inflation and border crisis that was caused by her leadership.
It's crazy, right? Trump Vance remain in action, battling hard and battleground states. Their message is clear, crisp, and concise, and will continue today.
Number one.
By the way, I see a report that commission officials are saying that the reason it went long is because of all the raucous applause. That's sort of the thing you build into. We have had conventions before. Like, you sort of know what.
That's amazing spin.
That's ridiculous spin, but you could call it amazing. Day one of the DNC, an organized, undisciplined marathon that started with their keynote speaker, Joe Biden, beginning his speech at 11:30 and inexplicably going till well past midnight. Sighs of relief are heard everywhere because the rapidly aging Joe Biden is no longer at the head of the table and hope they can now win in November. We'll recap and preview day two. And by the way, if you ever want to get the app, go to Fox News app right now and you could always get the podcast. So you can't go wrong. And you could, this way you can schedule it when you want. Let's bring in Michael Goodwin of The New York Post. Michael, your thoughts are day one.
Good morning, Brian. Well, I was in the hall last night, and I have to say it was
it was well done until you looked at the clock and you realized, I mean, why do they need Jamie Raskin? Why did they even Ashley Biden went on much too long? I mean, if the goal was to really send Joe Biden off with this great big thank you, as you say, why wait until almost midnight until it eventually concludes? So on the East Coast, and the Post says today in its article on it that half of America's viewers, television viewers, live in the Eastern time zone. So you're really missing half the country when you keep him up that late. And by the way, I don't know how it looked on television because I was in the hall, but he seemed really angry to me. Jill Biden seemed mirthless. This is obviously a very painful thing that the party has done, and they're trying to paper it over to make it look like a wonderful thing. But I don't think Joe Biden feels very happy about this. I think the sense that he has been robbed, that he could have won this election, he still believes that. I think contrary to the facts, nonetheless, this is kind of the bum's rush he's getting. And as you were saying, as Newt was saying before, that Kamala Harris does not give the impression that she's ready. I mean, she's great when there's nothing to be said, you know, sort of give a hello, wave, and, you know, all of that, but and read a few remarks on a teleprompter. But when she gets into the world of ideas, she quickly gets lost. And I think that's obviously why they're hiding her. They don't really know what this campaign is about other than Donald Trump is a bad guy. And I thought there was so much of that last night. I mean, it's, you know, to me, one of the most revealing moments was when Hillary Clinton was speaking, which otherwise I thought she gave a very good speech. When the crowd started lock him up, and she smiled and nodded. I mean, I think to me that is the disgrace of this party. They have engineered those charges against Trump. Those are all Democratic prosecutions. And so to be celebrating that, I think, is disgraceful.
But they don't see it that way. Michael, they don't see it that way. Here's an example of Joe Biden and the anger that you just talked about. Cut to.
It's been the honor of my lifetime to serve as your president. I love the job, but I love my country more. I love my country more. And all this talk about how I'm angry at all those people who said I should step down, that's not true.
Of course it's true. Of course it's true. Are you crazy?
No. We, bunch of us sitting together, kind of chuckled at that. I mean, come on. You're angry right now. You know?
The idea that you were forced out and you're not angry? I mean, that's not credible. You should be angry at the way you were treated. Nonetheless, it's understandable from a party point of view that you were going to lose. But we shouldn't sugarcoat the fact that he was blindsided by it.
So the New York Post writes in their op-ed, the Joe Biden show is officially over. It's in reruns. Biden even got bumped out of primetime. His speech started at 11:28. In the hour when old sitcoms usually run in syndication, that wasn't an accident. The first night of the Democratic conventions was loser's night. Biden, Hillary Clinton, all with duds like Kathy Hochul, zealots like AOC. Democrats lined up an endless list of speakers ahead of Biden to push his speech back as far as they could so as few people as possible would hear it. So that is a theory out there. I mean, you just put him on at 8 and let other people follow if you wanted. But now he's gone. Then took a while, but Barack Obama had nice things to tweet out. He's a great guy. Nancy Pelosi did the killing. She did the stabbing front and back, kicked him to the curb, and then wants everyone to think that it was his decision. I would have supported him either way. Cut 12.
Juanita Dunn said earlier today, quote, nobody wants to have a fight with Nancy Pelosi at this time, unquote. It does seem like there's some residual bad blood or resentment, and I'm wondering if you've spoken to him and what your response is to that.
Sometimes you just have to take a punch for the children.
And that's what you're doing right now? You're just going to take the punch for the children?
Who's punching right now?
I don't know.
Anita Dunn said nobody wants to have a fight with Nancy Pelosi at this time.
But you know what?
Have you talked to him?
I have to do.
Right.
He made the decision for the country. My concern was not about the president. It was about his campaign.
So no one's being honest. They're not being honest. Well, but Biden's not being honest when he says he's not angry. Jill's not being honest that they moved on. You see that Nancy Pelosi's not being honest that she did the killing since I didn't make any calls. Barack Obama's not being honest when he says what a great guy Joe Biden is when he was maneuvering behind the scenes with the George Clooney editorial green light at the very least and probably a lot more. Michelle Obama's not being honest because she's upset with the Bidens by the way they treated Beau's widow. So and then Nancy Pelosi obviously is not on speaking terms with the Bidens, loves the Obamas. So Hillary Clinton's probably not being honest because evidently Biden's resentful of her that she ran instead of him and she lost. So, guys, it's not a happy family.
No, it's divorce time all around. But look, I think, Brian, once we're done with this convention, it's going to be a fairly regular campaign. Biden will be out of the way, probably spending most of his time on beaches somewhere. The world will be going to hell, and there'll be nobody at the White House, nobody to call. The 3 a.m. phone call will go unanswered because Harris will be campaigning, and she wouldn't know what to say if she did answer the phone call. So the test is going to be, can Donald Trump make hay of this? Can he work his way through all of the brickbats they're going to throw at him? And can he take advantage of Harris's lack of experience, of her far, far left policy ideas, and of her sort of hiding from any kind of scrutiny? Can Trump punch through that Praetorian guard of the media that's going to protect her, that doesn't really want to interview her? Just imagine it this way. Nobody at CNN or the New York Times or the Washington Post wants to be the person who sits down with Kamala Harris and exposes her unthinking ideas and rambling thoughts. Nobody wants to do that interview. And so what they're going to do are softball questions to protect her. So this is what Trump faces. And it's back to a 50-50 race. And
he can still win.
He needs to win it because they're not going to, the media is not going to give it to him. Well, he's going to have to earn it.
I got numbers that are going to astound you. The MRC, Media Research Center, did this study. And they looked at the networks and their coverage. 84% of the network coverage is positive for Harris. 89% of the network coverage is negative for Trump. Now, please, on what planet does anyone get 89% negative coverage when you do have a guy who's winning on the economy, he's winning on immigration, he's winning on inflation, and for the most part, he's winning the election? Up until the last week, now it's pretty much a dead heat, slight nod to Harris. How could he possibly be 89% wrong and covered negatively? How could no one in any newsroom say, hey, guys, Trump did have a pretty good speech. He had a really good crowd, or he made these funny lines. He did survive an assassination. Can we say something that we're glad he survived? Anything?
No, they can't. You know, somebody sent me the list of the Associated Press's top 10 ideas or top 10 topics for the campaign and compared Trump and Harris on these top 10. The economy is not on the list. The economy is not on the list. The rule of law and democracy, I think, is very high, of course. You know, so climate change is very high, but not the economy. I mean, the border's all the way down the list. I mean, this is the media. It is thoroughly corrupted by partisanship.
So we're going to have to see. What's going to be interesting is you don't really need a negative story on Harris. We just need to know where she stands. She came out and said she wants to raise the corporate rate to 28%. Well, what does that mean to the average American? Very easy. All you could say is at one point when Barack Obama was president, our corporate rate was 35%, the fourth highest in the world. Who's going to bring their manufacturing back to America and their business to our shores if it's going to be that costly to do business? Trump dropped it to 21. She wants to take it up to 27. So to 28, that's 9 points above China, 5 points above Europe. The onshoring of businesses will stop in its tracks. They think it's going to be short-term revenue burst, and it's going to be a long-term deficit. So that's what he's got to go out and tell people. The corporations aren't billionaires. There are secretaries. There's people who sign leases. There are realtors. There's interns. There's receptionists. There's vice presidents, yes, and there's middle-class people too. But you're pushing the jobs back out of the country.
Well, not only that, Brian, corporations don't pay taxes, right? It's the workers whose salaries are affected by those taxes. So when you say we're going to charge company X, you know, not eight or nine percentage points more, what you're really doing is taking that out of the incomes of the employees of that company, or they're squeezing their suppliers. So there's a trickle-down pain that high taxes create. It's unseen because the money just doesn't show up anymore. Employees get a pay cut or they don't get a pay increase over time. Something has to give when the government takes more.
The other thing I bring up, and I'm over time already, but I like to ask her flat out, when an illegal immigrant comes to this country, are you in favor of free room, free board, free education? Now, in 2016, that might have been a pretty cool thing to say. It might be fun to campaign on that in the Democratic National on the primaries in 2020. But in 2024, the American people are not on board. And does she going to flip her stance on that? Because we got, 80,000 in New York City? They got 26,000 in Chicago who are taking up all the social services and classroom space? I mean, no longer can you say we have big hearts or a nation. Give me your huddled masses. Do you agree?
Look, I think it is a big problem for Democrats. But the one thing that I think has to be said about this campaign is that this is happening in Democratic cities and states. And to my knowledge, the approval ratings of the mayors has not fallen through the basement. People seem to have accepted this. Now, many people are leaving those cities and states, but millions of others are staying. And so I think the Democratic base, to my surprise, is not as upset over this migrant crisis as I think they should be in terms of, A, their own tax money being spent on this and the endless number of terrorist watch list people coming across. So I don't know what impact it's ultimately going to have in the swing states.
Undecideds, independents, I think, are fed up. We'll see.
I think so, too. I think they should be. But it's amazing to me the Democratic base seems to be coming home no matter what.
Okay, good luck with that. Game on. Let's let both statements sit out and let the American people vote. Just don't hide from your position. One thing about Trump, he doesn't hide. There's not a lot of subtlety with the guy. Michael Goodwin, thanks so much. Now, soon this game will start. On Friday, we begin. Back in a moment.
Hear the ins and outs of the 2024 election right here. The Brian Kilmeade Show. Breaking news, unique opinions. Hear it all on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Yeah, but the old lion's last roar.
That was a long roar.
Yeah, but it was, you know, but listen, I wish it had been shorter. I wish it had been earlier. But this party needed this tonight. There were tears. This was not, some stuff at these conventions is artificial, and this was a legitimate moment of catharsis and love. This guy, to me, the most powerful thing he said was, I was too young to go to the Senate, and now I'm too old to be president. I gave my best to you. That's Joe Biden.
Yeah, I mean, look, I don't want to put down people in the building, like Michael Goodwin said, must have been pumped up. They were a lot. I mean, they were happy to see AOC. They were happy to see Hillary. They were happy to see Joe Biden because he's going. But if Joe Biden was on Thursday, they would not be happy. That place would not be full. They wouldn't have 15,000 there like they did. No doubt about it. But I just would be better organized. I would not be mentioning Joe Biden's reelection in the platform. How could someone not go in there and fix that? That's nuts. How could you not have more discipline on the stage? Someone's got to go and say, hey, listen, when that light goes on, you got to get off. You know, when you do stand-up, that light goes on. If you go over and you're not Seinfeld, you're not going to work in there again. Unless you're in a stat really Joe Rogan, you go over that line and you're done. And what Chris Coons was doing and Warnock, he had to be going over. You got to respect the people that are coming up after you. I thought that was abundantly true. I'll be able to take your calls next, 1-866-408-7669. Then we're going to do a simulcast with Stuart Varney. You listen to the Brian Kilmeade Show as we get ready for day two of the DNC in Chicago. And then I bring you, when we get back too, I want to go over the ceasefire talks and the real story behind what's going on in Gaza.
The fastest 3 hours in radio. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Kamala cast the tie-breaking votes that gave us the worst inflation in American history, costing a typical family $28,000. And under Kamala, we have fallen into manufacturing recession with 13,000 manufacturing jobs lost in the United States since just the start of this year.
That is President Trump staying on message. Smaller crowds, local media, smart. J.D. Vance, the same thing. He's doing some local stuff today, too. And J.D. Vance is, too. This is the pace they got to keep the rest of the time. I'm sure they don't need me to say that. But they're going to be in Michigan. They're going to be in Ohio. I think that Ohio could really help. That Senate race is going to be tough. Obviously, Sherrod Brown is trying to buck the trend, and that's going more and more Republican every year is Ohio. And we'll have to see where that goes. What they have going for them right now is the economy. Think about this. The shrinking personal savings, June 2024, 3.4%. In February 2020, was 8.2%. Inflation under Biden-Harris, January 2021 to today, now it was up 19.4%. So all your stuff up 20%. Violent crime up across 66 major cities under Biden-Harris. From 2019 to the same period now to 2024, 6% increase in murders, 25% increase in aggravated assault, carjacking not there, but you know where that is, through the roof. Think about what's happening if you live in a city, especially here in New York, and what's happening in Washington, D.C. is really criminal. Trump's economic plan effects on deficit. Remove taxes on tips will cost the deficit $200 billion over 10 years. The thought is it's going to spur more in the economy because they'll put that money into the economy in some way. Eliminate taxes on Social Security adds $1.6 trillion over 10 years. Impose 10% tariffs on goods reduces deficit by $2.5 trillion. They want to do that to start bringing industry home and send a message to China, especially that if you want to start selling stuff to us, there's going to be a tax to pay because you're not equaling the playing field in your country. So it is a tactic. $700 billion in deficit reduction overall. Harris is going to expand the child tax credit. That'll be costly. Give first-time homebuyers $25,000. Where's that coming from? Increase minimum wage nationally. That'll drive businesses out. They say it will cost the economy $200 billion. So they're starting to put out details. The corporate tax rate up to 28%. Good luck. Now we're back to the higher end. How do we compete with other countries and try to onshore these companies? If you make it 28%, it dropped from 35 to 21. And you're not going to believe how many other taxes will go up if Trump does not win re-election, because his tax cuts will expire. Gary, you're in Daytona, Florida. Hey, Gary.
Good morning, Brian. How are you doing?
Great. What's on your mind?
Yeah, very, very simple. It's amazing that when you finished one of your last segments, you said, in what other place in the world would media coverage be 89% negative? And that would be Russia, which they also do get rid of their opponents over there, which fortunately for us that Mr. Trump dodged that. The second was the coverage was fantastic. I hope it's more of interviewing the protesters, and very disappointed when they are asked about October 7th. A lot of them have said right to the microphone they have no problem with it, and that needs to be put right there to the forefront.
Yeah, you know, it would be very easy. It used to be on the same page. Al-Qaeda bad, Hamas bad, Houthi rebels bad, Hezbollah bad. Now, all of a sudden, you can put a Hamas flag up, and it's not that big of a deal. Here's what you're talking about. I want you to hear this. Cut 18.
Do you support October 7th?
Who?
October 7th.
October 7th? Yes, I do. What's wrong with October 7th? You tell me.
Women and children.
What?
Raped and murdered.
What is this you came up with this? Where you come up with? They killed 40,000 Palestinian innocent women and children, and they have 100 hostages. They treat them like kings and princes.
Okay. I can't begin to tell you how heinous every word that came out of his mouth was.
Take care. That's insane.
I want you to hear a pro-Israel protester. Cut 19.
I think he's lost the Jews. I think the Democrat Party has lost the Jews. I think we're gone. 80% of Jews stayed in Egypt. 80% of Jews voted for Obama. We are not voting for the Democrats anymore. We are done. We are not that stupid. We have broken that trauma cycle. We are done.
And that's based on pure performance. You hear Kamala Harris is meeting with the mayor of Dearborn, Michigan, who is very pro-Palestinian. He's trying to get these people who are staying out and uncommitted, that avoided the primary under Joe Biden because he supported Israel with weapons and verbiage and went and visited there after the October 7th attack. Because of that, they stayed uncommitted. She met with them. They want an arms embargo. It was a private meeting. What did she actually promise them is what I want to know. And on just pure performance, that's when Trump comes out and says, listen, if you're Jewish and you're pro-Israel, why the hell would you vote for Joe Biden and now Kamala Harris? The whole party is changing before your eyes. It's becoming really apparent. Now, some of you out there are very pro-Ukrainian and not happy with Donald Trump saying, I'm not going to continue that war or fund that war, or besides J.D. Vance, most of the extreme right doesn't want to do that. That's fine. If you're Ukrainian, you might be upset by that. But I'll tell you what, I think Trump will give him an ultimatum. You come to the peace agreement, you're going to promise not to invade, there'll be something given there for NATO. But if they do go ahead and be obstinate, Trump will say, here are your weapons, now go win. Joe Biden says, here are your weapons, now I'll tell you how to use them, even though he's never served. He's never been in a war zone. He's never commanded a battalion. John, on the Fox News Radio app in California. John.
Good morning, Brian. I wanted to bring some information up. On the stock market, I'm tired of hearing these people talking heads on the Democratic side saying how great the stock market is. Under Joe Biden, with the inflation, which has to be considered, it's only 16% since day one that he took office. Under Trump, 56%. That's where our wealth is going.
Yeah, I mean, talk about how it's gone up. Right now, it hit highs, yes. But with the stock market, thankfully, by the way, remember we used to say, come on, 10,000. Now we're at 40,000. Thankfully, goes up. So it's just how much it's going to go up is key. So what Trump has, and thanks for the call, John, what Trump has, he's got the economy on his side. Most people in every poll say the economy was better under Trump. You want to go and be Pete Buttigieg today and say more jobs added under Biden? Okay, fine. If you told 2/3 of the country, stop working, go home, and these businesses go under, they're out of a job, sooner or later the workforce goes to get their jobs back or gets a new job, Biden gets credit for that. But if you want to go do that and pretend as if America forgot we had a pandemic when you took over, fine. If you want to forget America, that you said you were responsible during the pandemic, you kept these kids locked out of their classrooms because teachers' unions didn't want to open it up again. You didn't press them at all to go back. Number two, you vilified people that didn't want the vaccine. You told everybody if you got it, you wouldn't get it. And we got it, and we got it anyway. And then with a vaccine, more people died under Joe Biden than under Donald Trump. And we had no idea in the beginning what was hitting us. So Karl Rove knows that Trump's got a message in there. It doesn't have to be heavily nuanced. It's got to be stated. And here's what he says is disappointing him, and here's what he recommends. Cut 27.
Much more disciplined message needed. I mean, I've been through this twice. And you want to go to these places, and you want to have a simple message that the media has to cover. Instead, he gives them a gigantic smorgasbord. Some of it is written into a speech draft, but apparently some of it is just ad hoc. And they get to pick and choose. And who thinks that the dominant media in this country is going to pick the thing that is best productive for him in getting votes. They're going to pick out something like he just said, casting aspersions on Kamala Harris or President Biden. So, yes, you want to do this. You want to go to critical states. He's going later this week to Arizona, critical battleground state, to talk about immigration. But in order to force the media to cover your message, you need to be disciplined, focused, and short.
Right. Karl Rove makes a lot of sense. I know they're at war with each other, but if he was him and Chris LaCivita are close, Chris LaCivita is one of the co-chairmen of the campaign, I just wish they would talk. And I wish the president would put it behind him and just say, Carl, what do you think? Because what he's saying is not change your message within the economic message. I change it this way. That could be opinion. But what he's saying about discipline is that if you could avoid the personal attacks while show your charisma and your passion, then you'll win. Because people like what you did. They didn't like a lot of what you said. And, you know, whether it's Rosie O'Donnell or somebody else, just no reason. Just don't attack. You're going for the most important job. Arnold Schwarzenegger hosting The Apprentice. You're going for the most important job. So just go get the job and then get it done. And America will benefit because nobody can convince me that Kamala Harris is going to be an effective president. So quick message. On October 20th, I'm going to be in Peekskill, New York. Go to BrianKilmeade.com. VIP tickets available. History, Liberty, and Laughs. I go on stage, talk about all my books in historical order. And it is fun. We bring history to life in a way that you don't even get on Broadway. It's even better. And Peekskill, I've never been there, but here it's a fantastic town, just an hour outside of New York City. And then I get a chance to talk to you, especially if you have VIP tickets. We get pictures and my book, Teddy and Booker T. So keep it here. Go to BrianKilmeade.com. Coming back next, Stuart Varney, simulcast.
Now, the Brian Kilmeade Show joins Fox Business's Varney and Company with Stuart Varney, live on your radio and on Fox Business. Here's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. I'm going to be with Stuart Varney in a matter of moments. You know, Stuart's got the Business Channel, the number one show there. But first and foremost, he'll open it up. He'll go beyond stocks, talk about what's happening in the news. At the other end, after I'm done, I'll have a couple of minutes to squeeze some calls in. And then we can go ahead and do that. I have not discussed what's happening in Gaza and the ceasefire agreements. It looks like Benjamin Netanyahu has signed off on some of the provisions that Blinken wants him to. Hamas is a no-show. So let's listen.
10:51. That means it's time for Brian Kilmeade. He will miraculously appear in about 2 seconds on the right-hand side of the screen. And there he is. All right, Brian. Listen to what First Lady Jill Biden said about Biden's decision to drop out of the race. Roll it.
Weeks ago, when I saw him dig deep into his soul and decide to no longer seek re-election and endorse Kamala Harris with faith and conviction, Joe knows that our nation's strength doesn't come from intimidation or cruelty. It comes from the small acts of kindness that heal deep wounds, from service to the communities that make us who we are, from love of a country that shines with promise and renewal.
All right, Brian, the First Lady insists it was Joe's decision. What do you think?
No one's telling the truth. Nancy Pelosi's not telling the truth. She stabbed him in the back, stabbed him in the front, kicked him to the curb. Barack Obama's not telling the truth when he put out that that tweet that really saluted Joe and his life of service. He was behind it. Nobody's telling the truth that Hillary Clinton, evidently, the Bidens are resentful of her for getting the nod in 2016 from Obama and then losing it. And then evidently Michelle Obama is upset because of the way the Bidens treated Beau Biden's widow, because they were good friends and they felt as though that she basically was pushed out of the entire family because of the affair she had with Hunter. So nobody's telling the truth that, you know, Joe Biden, if he was so happy and if this was such a great moment, why wasn't he not at Bill Clinton's party? They had a birthday party for him yesterday afternoon. Why is he not hanging around doing some fundraising or some appearances like J.D. Vance and Trump are doing smaller venues in battleground states? Instead, he's going on vacation because I hear if you don't use your vacation days up, you'll just lose them. So he's going to go ahead and do that and leave the state rather than go. So now Nancy Pelosi sat there and acted like a big tribute to Joe, that he belongs on Mount Rushmore. I didn't make any calls, but I had to do what I had to do for the children. Has Nancy Pelosi done anything for the children? She does everything for her and her party. And when Joe Biden talks about how high and mighty and moral Joe Biden is, yeah, I think he attacked pretty good last night. This guy named Donald Trump called him a liar, made up that story that he's calling for a bloodbath if he loses the election, when it was an economic term that you know well, Stuart. It's used on used on your channel all day and night. And what about the fact that he said dictator, he'll be a dictator if he wins? That was a throwaway line he had with to make a town hall laugh with Sean Hannity. So please don't tell me that he's above name calling.
There's a lot of bad blood in this party. They just don't want it to surface in the nomination of Kamala Harris. Here's one for you. You're a New Yorker. Listen to New York's Governor Kathy Hochul. She bragged about her state convicting Donald Trump. Watch this.
If you think you're tired of Donald Trump, talk to a New Yorker. It's no wonder he had a fleet of Mar-a-Lago. Sorry about that, Florida. Trump hasn't spent much time in New York lately, except that is to get convicted of 34 felonies. And that's just fine with us, because New York's motto is Excelsior, ever upward. And Trump takes us ever downward.
You know, I weep for New York. I really do. That kind of statement from the governor of New York about Donald Trump is just outrageous. It boils down to constant Trump hatred. Seems like that's all they've got.
Especially the now, think about this. You just remind me of the civil trials. You took aim at him and his business when there was nothing to go after. You decided to fine him when there was no victim. He has now got his look. He had to put up $200 million in order to avoid liquidation. All about targeting. He was not a target when he was hosting The Apprentice. He was a target when he became a political enemy. You know what she's saying? If you're rich and successful at a Republican New York, you probably want to stay away. And guess what? They will. And then one of the craziest things was Wall Street. Donald Trump wants to be president for his Wall Street friends. You know this, Stuart. He doesn't have Wall Street friends. He is not in the market. This guy
is a realtor.
He builds. He has decided not to build in your state because taxes is too high, and you decided to target him. She's acting like she's really tough. And by the way, she's got to go to some speaking classes. Change your tone a little bit instead of trying to sound like a schoolyard bully.
And response wasn't real great either. I could tell the crowd's response wasn't that enthusiastic. Brian, I'm sorry we're out of time. We'll see you again real soon.
Go get him.
Stay in New York.
You got it. You know, we'll talk about that. I did want to, I know it's a little bit of an abrupt change, but I did want to talk about what's happening in Gaza. You know, I got extreme interest in that area. Obviously, I'm very pro-Israel, which used to mean I'm pro-American. But just to give you an idea of what's happening over there, so there's a ceasefire, and what the Hamas is asking for, and what the Israelis are saying is, look, the IDF has to stay in the Philadelphia corridor, and that is the line between Gaza and Egypt. Why? Because when they pulled out of that area, they were blind. And what happened is these sophisticated tunnel system were able to be made. They were putting huge tractor trailers down there. They set up a whole subterranean lifestyle where they made it a huge weapons depot, and they were able to do that horrific attack and go hide there. So now they want to do that, and they want to keep troops right up the middle. They also, the Hamas wants, on a 30-to-1 ratio for every hostage out, they want 30 prisoners out of the Israeli jails. We know what happens when these guys get out of these jails. They continue back to their terroristic ways. Case in point, Sinwar. He was in jail, got a brain tumor operation, got to go out of jail, got his free operation, and his thanks is creating a terrorist network. So I am really down on Hamas signing off on any of this, and I'm all for Israel finishing the job. What do you think? Go to BrianKilmeade.com. I'll weigh in. And I want you to weigh in, and then I'll let everybody hear what you have to say. Don't move. Thanks so much for being here.
Top Fox News headquarters in New York City. Always seeking solutions, never sowing division. It's Brian Kelly.
So glad you're here. I come to you from Midtown Manhattan, or around the country, around the world, where Pete Buttigieg told me crime is down. Fantastic. I didn't know I should feel so safe, and so should everybody else. What about the illegal immigrants? Are they down too? Oh, I guess that's not the case, but maybe he has a stat that says something different. Very interesting what's going on. A lot of surreal things going on this planet. Bill Hemmer's going to be joining us this hour, co-anchor of America's Newsroom. And we got Mike Rogers here, former Michigan congressman, wants to be the next senator from Michigan within striking distance of making that happen. Former chairman of the House Permanent Select Committee. He's got a military background and an FBI background. You would think perfect for Michigan. Congressman, welcome back.
Well, hey, Brian, I think we're perfect for Michigan. Thanks for bringing
that
it up.
That makes two of us. even if you were a Democrat, I'd say this is the type of qualifications that the founding fathers had in mind. It's supposed to be service. So you have expertise in various areas. You don't do it to get rich. You do it when you think you can help. I look at you, Dave McCormick, cut out of the same cloth. Look, they could be doing a lot of things. You could be doing a ton of stuff. But you say, you know what, I think there's a Senate seat open. I'm going to give it a shot. What are your thoughts? Who's coming your way, J.D. Vance or Donald Trump today?
Well, Donald Trump's coming. We're going to talk about crime. It's actually kind of fun. We're going to the sheriff's department where I started the initial thought of me getting into law enforcement. I was an intern for the Marine Patrol, you know, the sheriffs that go out on the lakes. We got tons of lakes in Michigan. It started right there at that sheriff's department. And so we've had an illegal immigrant have sexually assaulted a minor here in my home county. And this is not a county that gets lots of crime. And so we've just seen this tick up in Oakland County right next door. An 11-year-old was raped by an illegal. We had a 9-year-old was exposed. Some guy walked in and opened up his jacket and exposed himself to a 9-year-old girl. He was, get this, deported seven times before he got back in for the 8th time to do that. And as a law enforcement guy, I can tell you the next step to that is not good. You know, you're talking sexual assault and other things. He'll act on it for sure. We've had murders. We've had criminal gangs, international cartel gangs operating in southeast Michigan. I mean, it's bad. And I don't, you know, the Democrats run around and say, yeah, but it's not any worse than it was when they weren't here. That's just fundamentally wrong. They have the knack to look you in the eye and lie to you. I mean, unbelievable what these folks are doing.
Well, were you surprised that when Joe Biden was asked, and evidently he ad-libbed it, he came out and said, those protesters outside, they do have a point. And he's talking about the tens of thousands that are supposed to come this week to downtown Chicago in order to protest the support that Joe Biden, Genocide Joe in their mind, has for Israel. And he says, well, they have a point. What is that point?
That we should let Hamas cross the border, just brutally rape and murder children, women, men, drag people out of their homes and into tunnels, into the terrorist lair under the city of Gaza. I mean, seriously, these are the worst of the worst when it comes to terrorism. You can't support Hamas. You can't support the fact that these are terrorists willing to kill, that are teaching their kids it's okay to kill Jews. I mean, it's reprehensible. And so this is the Democrats trying to be on all sides of every issue to get their votes. They're like political cicadas, Brian. They come out every 4 years, say whatever they think they have to say, and then they bury themselves underground. You don't see them again for 4 years until, you know, the country is in tatters. I mean, you think about what's happened just in the last 4 years. I mean, we had to import more food than we exported under Joe Biden. They're very proud of talking about their firsts. Let me give you a couple of firsts. We have to import more food than we export last year because the regulation coming out of D.C. on our farmers. More foreign cars produced in America than domestic cars, first time ever under the Biden-Harris agenda. Our national debt, the interest payment is larger than the Department of Defense, first time ever for that as well. They didn't meet recruiting numbers for our military one single year they've been in office. Hey, congratulations, another first. They have been a disaster for the country. And now they're talking about, hey, that didn't all that work out well, but I'll set your prices for you. I'll go in and set your food prices. Venezuela tried this. You can't buy a loaf of bread in Venezuela half the time. I mean, this is really ridiculous. That's why this election is so important.
I want you to hear some of the protesters. And keep in mind, too, they're voting non-committed for Biden because he's too pro-Israel. For me, he's not pro-Israel enough. The slow walking of weapons, the lack of support, the lack of qualifying any civilian deaths really goes back to Hamas. They started this October 7th. And listen to this. Cut 17.
You're a Palestinian.
Yes.
You support Hamas.
Every Palestinian support Hamas, not just me. Every Palestinian support Hamas.
Cut 18.
You support October
7th. Who?
October 7th.
October 7th, yes, I do. What's wrong with October 7th? You tell me.
Women and children.
What?
To murder.
What is this you came up with this? Where you come up with this? They killed 40,000 Palestinian innocent women and children, and they have 100 hostages. They treat them like kings and princes.
40,000, that number came from Hamas. 24,000 is expected of Hamas fighters that are dead. And every one of them have been put in harm's way while the terrorists go into the tunnels and are perfectly safe.
Yeah, and think about where they found, you know, listen, this is a whole bunch of really bad decisions, and I hope Democrats at least wake up to this. So when they first came in, the Biden-Harris administration, they told the Saudis can't go after the Houthis, took the Houthis off the terrorist list, gave money, billions of dollars, $250 billion by allowing Iran to go ahead and sell oil. All of that money poured into Hamas. All of that money poured into Hezbollah. By the way, they ended up killing the head of Hamas in Tehran. You know, in the FBI, Brian, we would call that a clue. I mean, this is all coming out of really bad policy, projecting weakness by the Biden-Harris administration. They are entangling us in the Middle East in a way we don't have to be. And there's just no leadership to get us out of it, except them dancing around like, I'll be a little bit for Israel and I'll be a little bit for the terrorist group Hamas. That doesn't work.
There's been infiltration by the Iranians into the Trump campaign, the hacking, the taking of documents. We know this for sure, confirmed by the FBI. Used to be there. Where's the retribution for this? Why don't we blink the lights in Tehran and let them know what we're capable of? Why are we tolerating this? They've also hurt seven of our armed forces, of our men serving over in Iraq. There's been no retribution for that either.
No, you're right. And again, it's projection of weakness. And when you project weakness, you're going to get a lot of trouble. So think about that. So Iran has done that. You know, they've had cyber attacks raging across the Middle East, including on Israel. They've had this cyber penetration to steal, to try to interfere with our elections. Don't think it's not. They want to release documents that aren't going to be helpful, you can imagine, or at least they can put a spin on it that doesn't look helpful. They're absolutely up to no good. And I agree with you. There is a time when you reach over and you flick them in the forehead. In my mind, this is it. We have capabilities. It's time that they use them. And again, start showing that Iran needs to get put back in the box, the way Donald Trump put them back in the box before, by the way. I mean, you need to ramp up sanctions, cut off their oil sales, tell them, guess what, we're going to grind you down until you start behaving. You've killed Americans across the Middle East with your proxy war attacks. You've killed and responsible for the October 7th event in Israel, the Hezbollah attacks that are happening now. It's you. We're going to do something about it. The longer they keep talking about it and sending these sternly worded memos, the more trouble it invites and the more you get entangled to the place where we may have to do something more serious.
It's just amazing. You know, William Cohen was in with the Clinton administration. They'd have some Republicans with a sense of, you know, what it takes to be successful. They just don't seem to be engaged in any long-term thinking. I want a ceasefire. Well, what do you want from that ceasefire? What could you actually get from that ceasefire that might result in any decent period of peace? Nothing. They just want it to end because November is coming quickly. I want to bring you to something that Michigan cares about especially, and that is this net zero energy policy. Harris is committed to implementing the EPA's disastrous new mandates on power plants and electric vehicles. Under the EV mandate, 67% of all new vehicles sold in the U.S. would have to be fully electric by 2032. It would obliterate the U.S. car industry, throwing more than 100,000 Americans out of work while adding to electricity demand. And the power plant rules require existing coal plants, new and modified natural gas plants, either to adopt unproven carbon capture technologies or close by 2032. This is a ridiculous theoretical course that we're actually on right now. And if you get four more years of Kamala Harris, you can't turn this ship around.
No, you cannot. I'm glad you called it a ship. I thought you were going to say something stronger, and I would have agreed with you on that as well. Listen, this is really dangerous for America, and that number 100,000 is just wrong. It takes 40% less labor to build an electric vehicle than even a hybrid vehicle, by the way. That 40% would work out in a state like Michigan to about 400,000 jobs. These are manufacturing jobs. You take those off the playing field, our economy is going south in a hurry, and it's devastating. This is recession and depression type kind of unemployment. And by the way, five jobs for every manufacturing job. You know, you can do the math. A couple million people will be out of work or hurting or under, not able to pay their bills. And for what? 500 pounds of critical minerals, and 85% of which has to be processed in China, go into that electric vehicle, 4 tons of carbon out of the air. That same 500 pounds makes 90 hybrid vehicles, 140 tons of carbon out of the air. We don't have to do this, and you don't have to kill the American auto industry. And everybody's in on it. The Democrats here in the state of Michigan didn't vote to protect the state's auto industry by allowing the EPA to go ahead and ban gas engines. We have 1.1 million jobs here, Brian, 1.1 million jobs associated with building gas engines. And by the way, they could build hybrid cars too. You do build electric, 4 or 500,000 of those jobs are going away. This makes no sense. And who wins? China wins. And you know how China is building its electric vehicles? They're building 2 coal-fired plants a week. This is so stupid.
Right.
I brought you a script and said, hey, Brian, I have an idea for a movie, how you beat America. And I laid out what we just talked about. You'd laugh me out of the room 2 years ago.
But why don't people in Michigan know this? Why would anybody think that this is in Michigan's best interest? This is the type of thing where the American public would force any politician to get practical or else lose the battleground state. Does Alyssa Slotkin sign off on this?
Oh, she did. She voted to allow them to ban gas engines. She said when she first got elected, I will never vote for an EV mandate. Guess what she voted for? An EV mandate. And so they're just not – listen, Democrats have been dishonest with the American people for the last 6 years, 4 years under Biden-Harris, just like they're doing now. Hey, the border's fine. Your economy's great. What are you worried about? Oh, we love police officers today. None of that's true. And this EV mandate benefits China and China alone. We got to stop this or we're going to be in a world of hurt. And guess who's going to control that world? China. One quick thing on that. China controls about 90% of the graphite production and distribution in the world, 90%. You want to build your electric grid, you need graphite. You want to build chips that go into computers and cars and airplanes, you got to buy graphite. You want to build electric cars, you got to have graphite. China put that graphite on a national security list, meaning they can shut it off anytime they want. Why would we give China that kind of control over the U.S. economy? And autos, by the way, make up about 1/7 of our economy. I already told you that because the government is in there mandating cars they have to build to sell cars that people don't want to buy, has already cost us market share in this country. You cannot have the government involved in this business. They took $8 billion to build 500,000 chargers across the country. And you know how many they built in 4 years? 9.
It's crazy. I mean, it's crazy.
Yeah,
when they, and they're bragging about anything. The infrastructure bill.
Yeah. I mean, this. And by the way, those nine chargers that the environmentalists love, look at your grocery price. Thank you very much for spending all that money, borrowing that money from countries like China to print it on the money machine, spend it. Now your groceries are more expensive and you don't have chargers. That's what happens when the government runs your business.
Now our country is no longer approving new leases on natural gas. Does that
they
do?
They want your gas
LNG.
Higher.
So
they want your gas prices higher, Brian. They do. They want to drive you and push you into electric vehicles. And one way to do that is make your gas prices so high that you think that's your only salvation. Problem is, you're going to lose your job in the process, too.
It's crazy, but you can't say I'm not for fracking. I'm no longer going to stop fracking. At the same time, stop the export and new leases on LNG. So that is currently the state of the game right now in Biden's America and Harris's America. So I don't know how people in Michigan feel about that, but I think they need to know. So far, the Real Clear Average has Slotkin up 4 over the last month. two in the last Rasmussen poll, two in the Fabrizio Anzalone poll, three there. Oh, and the New York Times poll has Slotkin by three. How do you close that gap?
So a couple of things. It's about a 4% margin of error. So we think we're right in the game. She runs around the state saying she's a moderate. She had voted for Joe Biden 100% of the time. So what we've got to do is show that, listen, that's not moderate. If you're voting 100% of the time with people who want to kill the number one industry in your state, you cannot be a moderate. And our goal is to not attack her personally, but to walk through these events of where she has not stood with the people of Michigan. And today, Trump's going to be in town talking about crime in Michigan. Example, she didn't vote. She voted against police officers. She voted for sanctuary cities. Everything that normal working families in Michigan go, boy, that doesn't sound right. Well, this doesn't sound right. So we're going to point out that she's not the moderate she says she is, that she has caused us more problems than she's solved. And this is what happens when you send somebody who spent the last 20 years of their life in Washington, D.C. You can't bring Washington, D.C. to Michigan. You need to send a guy that's from Michigan to Washington, D.C.
He is Mike Rogers. He wants to be your next senator over in Michigan. We have a lot of listeners there. Good luck with the former president today.
Hey, thanks, Brian.
Go get him. Mike Rogers, back in a moment.
You're with Brian Kilmeade. The talk show that's getting you talking. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Hey, welcome back. William was on WTRC in South Bend, Indiana. We had Mayor Pete on today. Do you miss him?
Not one bit. So, and every time I hear him, I just cringe. I don't miss him at all, Brian.
So what's on your mind?
Hey, you know what? I miss talking to you, though. I used to talk to you quite regularly. I haven't talked to you in a while. What's on my mind is, again, I live in South Bend as well, a close nearby city anyhow, less than a mile away from the Michigan line, and I cannot believe that the UAW, that the Teamsters, I can't believe that they're not just out of their mind with what Gretchen's done and what they've been doing to the United Auto Workers.
It's crazy.
I mean, again, They're going to be without a job. And then the other thing is, again, I watch you every morning on Fox. Every morning I'm up watching Fox at 4:15 in the morning. I see all these great ads that are running for Trump. Why aren't they on any other stations? The only station I see them on is Fox.
Really? I don't know. That's a good question. I could find out. I'm going to have a Trump guy on Friday. We'll probably get someone on earlier. I'll find out what they're running. But they got to be everywhere. They got so much money. Yeah, they might have more right now, Kamala, but it's only like 40 million more. They have so much money.
He's so busy, he'll make your head spin. It's Brian Kilmeade.
And we also saw it in the way that Joe Biden credited Vice President Harris with some of the accomplishments of their time governing, talking about her role in the hostage negotiations, for example. I mean, it's very specific and important stuff that they've shared in governing.
Well, he said in sort of that tongue-in-cheek way, you know, some of the best presidents started as a vice president, obviously a nod to himself, but also it speaks about his legacy.
Like Bush 41, I guess, who didn't get reelected, but I also thought did a good job. But that was a fun moment where he actually smiled. Besides that, I feel like he was shouting and angry. No doubt about it. It's a very positive experience. It seems to be very upbeat. But why should I project and wonder when I could go right to Bill Hemmer, co-anchor of the America's Newsroom, the runaway successful hit, as Bill tells everyone he meets. It's on from 9 to 11 hour time. He just got off the air and wanted to join our audience. Bill, thanks so much for being with us. How is Chicago?
Hey, Brian, good morning to you. We are on the floor. It's a little quiet right now. They're running through a couple drills and rehearsals for later this evening. But I think I am literally sitting in Nancy Pelosi's seat from last night. So I am in the front row of the California delegation coming to you live.
There's a lot of subplots going, but for the most part, did you see a lot of positivity there in the arena?
Yeah, I think, listen, it's only night one, so I preface it by saying that we've got three more nights. I think thus far, I've been going to conventions since the year 2000. It's more conventional, to borrow a bad word, I guess. than what we saw in Milwaukee. I thought Milwaukee had greater creativity. I thought the band, the house band, was excellent. I thought the delegates had a reason to dance and party and sing in Milwaukee. Here it was, it seemed to be really loaded with speech after speech, yeah, after speech after speech. And that eventually takes us to midnight. And I would just say the mission last night was to give Joe Biden a classy goodbye.
Yeah.
I don't know if it may necessarily accomplish that because of the late hour. And Brian, that's all anyone's talking about today, how long of a night it was last night. Thus, we are on day two, Tuesday, as we speak to you now.
This is what Jake Tapper said, a network you used to work at, right when it came to a close. Cut eight.
There are a lot of people, if they have made it this far into what is, to be honest, on the East Coast, the second day of the Democratic National Convention, as I'm not the first one to observe.
It is late, which is very notable, I think, and for a lot of reasons.
Yeah, I mean, it is fair to say that the Republicans had a tighter ship.
You know, why is that? I mean, it looks like they came up with a platform that has all these references to Joe Biden's reelection and Joe Biden, and then they have a night in which they got to cut three speakers and it's still too long.
Yeah, my guess is this. Like, think about what you remember from Milwaukee. Think about what you remember from 4 years ago or 8 years ago, 12 years ago. It's not a lot. You know, you remember 20 years ago, Barack Obama in Boston, who will speak tonight, 20 years to the year, 2004. And I think from Milwaukee, as I reflect on it now, I mean, what you remember is Trump coming out with a bandage on his ear. So what are we going to remember for this convention? I think most folks are going to remember that Joe Biden was pushed deep into the night for his goodbye speech, and that's not a good look. However, they do have a real good chance for Obama to blow the roof off this place tonight. I fully expect him to do that. I think Kamala Harris will be at a place to be determined in a battleground state, so she's going to pop up again. By the way, this place is, for the first 2 hours last night, it was a little low-key, and then she popped up out of nowhere. No one knew it was happening. She appeared for about 3 minutes, and the entire mood in the arena changed. So they got that going for them. But, Brian, there's a big challenge here. They have to introduce Kamala Harris,
yep,
who most people don't know. They don't know her bio. They don't know her resume. They have to get that done. There was very little of that last night. They also have to introduce Tim Walz, and fewer people know about him and what he has done in his life and his political career. That's two really big challenges that they still need to meet over the next 3 days.
So I watch Andrea Mitchell interview talk about maybe the need to replace Kamala Harris as vice president on the ticket. We watched Jamie Raskin say something very similar on CNN. We watched Nancy Pelosi just say, you know, do you think she's the right person for the job? She says, well, he thinks so. And then Elizabeth Warren said something similar in 2023. How could that same person be now looked at as the second coming of Margaret Thatcher and Barack Obama? And
I guess it's politics. It's, Brian, it's the only card they can play legitimately 3 months away from a national election.
Okay. I mean, obviously, but they just want us to have short-term memory loss. They want us to forget about what she said in the past and what she's done. I mean, I just bumped in with Rachel Maddow saying she gets credit for the hostage negotiation. Please, is there anybody that thinks she played a role in the hostage negotiation?
Well,
I mean, don't you think it would have leaked out prior?
Listen, if you think that way, if Republicans think that way, if Donald Trump thinks that way, then they should come away from this thinking that they've got a real opportunity to draw a distinction. That's what I think. I mean, the objective here is to get more points than the other team, right? So they may have an opportunity. Here's my sense, Brian. So much has happened in the last month and a half that no one has lived through before. It hasn't happened.
I know.
All these events back to back to back. There's a real good chance, like, the traditional bump from the convention maybe just doesn't happen. And maybe the bump has already taken place, and you come out of here and things are flat, or they are where they are now. And that would lead you mm-hmm. to what I consider to be a significant moment, two of them in September. One is September 10th, the debate on that Tuesday night, and then 8 days later is the possibility for Donald Trump sentencing on the 18th. Those are huge moments. I actually think, as I sit here now in the California delegation, that debate is wow, it is paramount.
Oh, yeah.
And I hear she's been practicing, and I don't know if he has or not, but, you know, you're going to get 60, 70, 80 million eyeballs on that, maybe 100 million people watching. There's going to be a lot of people, undecideds, independents, are going to make up their mind watching those two sit next to each other.
Right, or stand. We'll see. We don't know any of the parameters yet. But we know that the Fox debate has been rejected by the Kamala Harris camp. That came out last night and was told to us or told to everybody by the Trump team. So they rejected it. He announced it on Truth Social. So right now it looks like one and done. Tulsi Gabbard has been brought in to help out Trump. She did so well. But I thought J.D. Vance really summed some things up. By the way, he's impressing me more in every interview and a lot of these speeches. Cut 26.
These guys know that they're running a candidate who's fundamentally a phantom. There's no actual evidence that Kamala Harris knows what she believes. She's not talking to the media. And her entire argument so far, of course, scripted via a teleprompter, Jesse, is that if you elect her president, she will somehow fix the inflation and border crisis that was caused by her leadership and promoted by her policies. So the entire idea that Democrats can run this fake campaign for another 80 days, where their argument is fundamentally that Kamala Harris has nothing to do with the administration, where she's the vice president, Jesse, just doesn't make a whole lot of sense. And I think that's why the Democrats' convention is low energy. I'm sure the Hamas protesters don't help.
Your thoughts. If the word phantom is correct, you have no idea what she stands for, only what she has said.
Yeah, I guess my comment would be, whether it's Vance or Trump, it's up to them to prosecute the case. It's on them. And if they're going to do the prep and be ready for it, but the VPs are going to have two debates, we do believe, right? Is that correct? That hasn't changed. I don't think so.
They have two debates?
I do believe there was two that they have talked about.
Okay.
Correct me if I'm wrong on that, okay? But listen, I watched Tim Walz in that little interview with Kamala Harris last week on YouTube. It looked like a bad Tinder date to me. I don't know how well he performs. Maybe he's really good, but no one knows him. If he does really well, he can make an impression. Look, if you want to win this election, and I believe it's up for grabs right now, you better get prepared, get your ducks in a row, and make sure that you are not losing on any single day for the next 77 days. Stay on point, stay on message, and you will do well.
So I watched, and this is what people have pointed out to me, including Sid Rosenberg, who does the morning show on WABC, one of our great affiliates. Mm-hmm. And he says, you know, people want Trump to stop insulting Kamala Harris. But look at what they said about him last night. Called him a liar.
That's true.
Called him a dictator.
Yeah.
Not worthy in an insurrection. And it goes on and on. I could go on and on forever. So the message back to Trump is, really? So I'm supposed to be above it all and yet receive these attacks?
Yeah, you make a good point. I've heard that from others, too, and I don't think they're wrong. And I think that reputation's been laid on Trump, and it's sticking, and Democrats are fine with it. And it appears that most of the people in America have accepted it. But your point's well taken about the amount of insults that came last night, and I would expect more tonight and Wednesday and Thursday.
So, Bill, give me an idea of how you feel, like when people know you're from Fox walking around, how are you received?
It's a great question. I want to set the scene for you a little bit here. So I'm a reporter on the what they call the stage area, the podium area. So as you're looking at the big stage to the left, there's a row of like six or seven of us. And for the first time in my experience, I can actually see backstage. So you can see the next speakers getting ready and getting prepared, which I think is very interesting. So a lot of surprises you can't see you can see, but the television audience can't. So I know when Kamala's coming out. I know when Joe Biden's going to come out. I know when Joe Biden's going to come out, et cetera, et cetera. With regard to your question, Brian, I walked through the floor last night right before Kamala came out.
Right.
And I was down there about 10 minutes before I went back to my post. A couple people shook my hand. A couple people said hello, but not a lot. Had I done that in Milwaukee, I probably would have taken 500 selfies in that time. Okay? And I think this is a reflection of America, and that the folks in Milwaukee choose to get their news from certain sources. And the folks here in Chicago, for the most part, the delegates, choose to get the news from other places. And it's like walking down a sidewalk in Manhattan. You can be, if you choose, to be anonymous again. And that ain't such a bad thing.
Right. And you, you're somebody that lives in Manhattan. I visit. I come and I jet to 42nd and go back to Long Island. So I want you to hear this, Bill. You used to work at CNN. And just talk about this means so many things on so many different levels. And it's only 10 seconds. Listen, Stephen Colbert and Caitlin Collins.
Trump has kind of been thrown on his heels by this. And he's not really sure how to go after Vice President Harris. He knew his attack lines on President Biden. He really has struggled with how to go after someone who's 20 years younger than him, who is a different gender, a different race. It's kind of been this moment where he has not been able to coalesce around a single attack line.
I know you guys are objective over there, that you just report the news as it is.
Oh, I know. CNN makes it. I know.
Is that supposed to be a laugh line?
I wasn't supposed to be, but I guess it is.
What does that tell you? What does that tell you?
Yeah, God bless her. She kind of walked right into that.
But even the New York audience who loves Stephen Colbert, and Stephen Colbert is as left as it gets, like Rachel Maddow with a laugh line. And he was totally unaware that his audience was going to react like to that statement.
Yeah, I watched it. And I guess if I were sitting there and I were her, I wish it would have come out differently if I were the person receiving the question.
But it says a lot. I mean, most everyone feels as though when they watch certain news, they look and see certain things. And I think it's good to hear other sides. Like, I have a lot of people when they come up to me, they'll say, I watched The Five, but, you know, Harold Ford gets me mad, or Juan Williams gets me mad, and I'm thinking to myself, why? It's just another opinion. You got to be open to other opinions.
Yeah, I met the mayor of Chicago last night, and Brandon Johnson, and he's a pretty progressive cat, and I introduced myself, and I want to know why the pro-Israel group was not given a permit to march. And he said, well, we have a process and we have deadlines and we have a police department to manage that. I said, I'd love for you to come on my show and explain that to the audience. He said, what, me come on Fox? I said, of course, come on. I said, I'll be fair. I give you my word. I shake his hand. I said, he said, come on. I said, just watch our show. When you're having your coffee in the morning, watch our show and you decide. But this is an open invitation to you. And he said, I drink chai latte, not coffee, and turned to 180 and walked away. And I just think it's a real missed opportunity. We're in his city. Chicago is a great town.
Of course.
It is a great, great Midwestern city. And I've been coming here all my life. The weather's beautiful. The city looks spectacular, Brian. The murder rate sucks, but the leaders here don't care about it. The education levels that we're reporting on are not up to par.
Terrible.
It needs to be changed.
31% of reading proficiency.
And it's up to the leadership here in the city to make a change. However, there are some things to brag about, and I would give him that opportunity if he would say yes. And the fact that he would just turn away and not consider it, I think is unfortunate for him and for his town.
Really? And the other thing is they are worried about this. The White Sox may never be good again. They might supplant the Mets as the worst team ever this year. Maybe that's what it's about. How about this? I have Mayor Adams. I see him every year at that Cardinal Dolan event for the Al Smith dinner. Every year he comes up to me, hey, Brian, how you doing? I got to come on. As soon as he goes, I'll come on. As soon as I talk to his people, they just go, he's not coming on.
They shut it down. Yeah, we've had a chance to have him on twice, I think, you know, coming out of the pandemic early on in his administration. And invitations there, just like you're offering as well. But can I say this, Brian? One of the great things about Chicago, I flew in Friday, so I had all day Saturday just to check out this city. Had a chance to walk from the hotel to Wrigley Field. It's about 6 miles.
Yeah.
Check out the Cubs game and walk back again. And I tell you, that's a great memory for the summer of 2024. That was a great moment.
Nice. And you're okay. Nothing happened to you. So that's good, Bill Hemmer.
You know, I told my driver that. He said, you did what? I said, it was a beautiful day. We're walking through Lincoln Park and the zoo and walking up Clark Ave. I said, there's no problem there. So listen, it all worked out. I'll tell you one thing, so I know you're a huge baseball fan.
And Bill, I am going to get a break here. Yeah.
Okay. The tease is Joe DiMaggio.
Okay. We'll pick it up where you left off. Make sure we just earmark that. Bill Hemmer, we'll watch you all day, watch you all night, 9 to 11, Monday through Friday. Don't move.
This is the Brian Kilmeade Show. More to know. Sponsored by Prevagen. Prevagen is the most recommended memory support brand by pharmacists.
All right, get this. The Olympics come to Los Angeles, and guess what? The NFL, Travis Kelce, as well as Jason Kelce, are encouraging players to play in the flag football competition. Could Team USA orchestrate a team of all-pro Super Bowl winners to absolutely dominate and route to a gold medal? Yes, of course, he says. It's definitely not a no. The amount of enthusiasm that we've been seeing among our players broadly for flag football has been remarkable, Miller said. There could be some hiccups, though, as the league, it's 32 teams and the players, the NFLPA, all have to be on the same page with it. Look, I'd love to see it happen. They'd have to postpone training camp, maybe adjust a week or two. But who else is going to play? What other country is going to play? Pete, do you have any idea? Is anyone else playing football?
It's huge in England. It's a really big sport in England.
Do they have players?
Not for them.
Oh, yeah. I mean, to watch. But we need to play other countries, don't we? Morocco, maybe? Cuba? Anybody?
I'm Guy Benson. Join me weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern as we break down the biggest stories of the day with some of the biggest newsmakers and guests. Listen live on the Fox News app or get the free podcast at GuyBensonShow.com.
Listen to the show ad-free on Fox News Podcast Plus, on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music with your Prime membership, or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.